Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Well, hello, everyone. We are so grateful that you joined us today, and we are going to be taking your calls for the next couple of hours, 1-800-229-3000. And by us, I mean Dr. Alice Benton and Dr. Jill Hubbard. And, you know, we always love to hear the brilliance of our co-hosts. And today, you know, Alice, I just want to know, what's on your mind? What do you got for us today?
Well, Becky, it's a heavy topic because it's about miscarriage. And it's a topic that I don't think we in community talk about frequently enough. So I was looking up some of the statistics of how frequently miscarriage occurs. And it's around 10 to 20% in known pregnancies. And yet the number is higher when a baby is miscarried, a fetus is miscarried before the pregnancy is even known. For it to be that high and yet so rarely discussed. At the beginning of March, we honored the passing of our son, Vincent. He was our fourth child, miscarried in about the third month. And I was looking at what other women have experienced in miscarriage, and their spouses as well, their partners as well. Many of us, we feel like it's partially our fault. About half report feeling guilty and ashamed that maybe I did something wrong. Maybe there was too much stress, that argument, the alcohol I drank, the caffeine I consumed. Is that why my baby passed away? About 37% feel like it is the loss of a child versus those that don't recognize that loss as having lost a child. And a couple of ways we can deal with miscarriage, we have to have the courage to talk about it with the right people who can be accepting and help us grieve. Naming the baby that we lost, Vincent, is our son's name. And then marking the anniversary with a ceremony, with a prayer, with a special meal. Although I'll admit, I sometimes forget. I forget how old he would be. I forget when he passed away because I don't have that bigger reminder that we normally would with the loss of a family member. And so I'll admit that it's not even easy for me to always keep up with, to remember, and to make sure I do something about it. I found out that my cousin had a miscarriage as well, and I didn't know. So I think that a lot of us have experienced this, but we don't know where to bring it and we don't know how to talk about it. And we invite you to contact us, call us here. We can get you connected with a counselor. We can talk about it here on the air to help you through the loss of your child.
You know, Alice, it's such an important topic, too, because many women will experience miscarriage, like you were quoting those percentages. And her body will go through just like what you do when you have a baby. So you can have postpartum depression, but because there's not a baby, you don't recognize that. And some women struggle for months after the loss of a child. And you know, there is help available. The other part of this, too, are those women who are struggling with infertility and the multiple attempts of trying to conceive a child. And the desperation that occurs and just the journey of infertility can be such a lonely journey. But I love what you just said about finding the right people to connect with. You know, there are no easy answers as far as, you know, all you have to do or you shouldn't have done that, like you said. But it really is, how do we support, how do we carry that burden with someone and not offer quick answers? Mm-hmm. Because there are some things that we struggle with in life that we're not going to make sense of this side of heaven. And it doesn't mean that it wasn't part of a bigger plan, but man, we can't understand it sometimes.
And the loss is, of course, not just to the women, but to your spouse and to the other children who lost a sibling. It's a family loss.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I heard it say that grief there was a saying that said something like grief is evidence of love. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, to have that feeling, even though you didn't know this child, you were hopeful and you were looking forward to all the promise that a new child would bring. And it just, it's hard. Thanks for bringing the subject mm-hmm. up. You know, we're going to be taking calls, 1-800-229-3000 for the next couple of hours. Maybe you're struggling with grief or maybe loss, maybe miscarriage. We want to help you get on a new path. We'll be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Artimer with a New Life Moment.
You know, decision-making is typically choosing between one thing and something else. But if you consider faith in Jesus Christ, well, that doesn't seem to be the case. For a follower of Christ, the issue isn't between one thing and another, but between one thing and everything else. Consider the issue of fear. Living without fear isn't an option, but knowing what to fear is. If we fear the Lord, we need fear nothing else. However, if we don't, we'll necessarily fear everything else. Well, the same is true of faith. We all have faith. The important issue is, what do we have faith in? If you trust God, you shouldn't need to trust anything else. If you don't trust God, you'll trust about everything else. Are you fearing and trusting everything else but God? For some help, why don't you visit us at newlife.com. I'm Stephen Arterburn, and thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
We always appreciate a word from Steve, and that is a powerful word. You know, we think about what do we have faith in and the things that cause us to worry and be fearful. We're just so glad to always hear from him because we all learn from him all the time. We're taking calls for the next couple of hours, 1-800-229-3000. We're going to go right into the calls. We're going to talk with John, who's calling us from Knoxville, Tennessee, and listens on WRJZ. Hi, John. Thanks for calling. How can
Hello.
We help you today? Hello.
Hello. I can't believe I'm first.
Yay!
You win, John.
Yeah. And I'm a longtime listener. I've listened since probably back in the 90s when it was like Arterburn, Townsend, and Cloud. And
yes.
So first time
Thank
I've ever
you.
Called, though.
Oh, great. Well, we're so glad yeah. that you called today. Yeah.
Thanks. So I'm calling about my mom. She's 67 years old, and she just basically room. She doesn't get out to use the restroom, and then she goes back to bed. She had a nervous breakdown like maybe 6 years ago, and she had suicidal ideation, and that's what put her in the hospital. And she did the kind of the stuff that she was told to do. Like, they got her medications balanced out in the hospital, and she did the in hospital stuff that they told her to do. And then she did some therapy, but very little. Like, once she got out, but now she just doesn't engage at all. And she's had some other trauma. Like, my father was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and so he has a lot of mobility issues. But what is ironic is that he often is like going to town to get her food mm-hmm. to provide meals for her when she's physically capable mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. getting up things, but emotionally, mentally, she's not. So my question is, I've got two children that want their grandmother back. It's like they remember, like, I have nieces and nephews too that remember when grandma or granny was better. Now she's never always, I mean, she's always dealt with depression, even when I was a child, me and my sister. And it just, I guess it kind of culminated with the nervous breakdown. But anyway, she's at this point now where she just doesn't engage at all. And
so, John,
so part of me, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, can I ask you a question here?
Sure,
because,
sure.
Yeah, she definitely sounds like she has major depressive episodes, but you yeah. refer to a nervous breakdown. So can you tell me oh. how that was different than her ongoing regular depressive episodes? Because nervous breakdown means a lot of things. It's kind of a catch-all term for people. And so I'm just curious what that means in your family.
Well, how I'm using it, I guess, is just the suicidal ideation became to the point where she, I guess she thought she would take mm-hmm. her life. And, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that it was a culmination point. And she had to go to the hospital.
Okay, so it was her hospitalization because she was unsafe to herself. And so the depression
yeah.
had spiraled down. Okay.
Correct, yeah, okay. yeah, yeah.
And John, when you ask your mom to return to treatment or to engage more with you and the kids, the grandkids, what's her response?
Yeah. she's very, very defensive. Like, she does, she says stuff like, I'm fine, you know, or I'm okay and I don't need to go back. But even when she would go, she wouldn't talk to the therapist. She would just sit there and not really even engage. And I say, Mom, I think you need to go back to see your therapist. And she just, it's not something that she's willing to do. And that's kind of what I need help with. The other thing is she's a hoarder and she has an animal in her house. She has a puppy dog. Well, it's not a puppy now. She's always had dogs growing up because she likes, I guess, that companionship or whatever. But as her depression has progressed, she's gotten worse about keeping the dog up, and so she lets the dog defecate in her bed.
Oh.
And she does not get up and like take the dog out.
Mm-hmm.
She'll say stuff like, oh, I'm afraid an eagle will swoop down and get the dog, or I'm afraid that the dog will hurt itself if it goes outside.
And
it's just
you see with how she's handling her environment, it's so likely to keep her stuck and to spiral her down even further. Has the family, your father, your other sibling, have you all considered an interventionist?
Well, no, we've not. I mean, yes, we have, but we've not ever reached out to anybody. That's kind of the odd thing is that she has a psychiatrist. I think the psychiatrist calls her and they do video conferencing, but Mom never like discloses that she has a hoarding problem, and I think the psychiatrist just wants to make sure she's not suicidal and that she doesn't need any medication and these kinds of things, and it's not extremely helpful, I don't think, but you know, she is under psychiatric care.
Yeah, it sounds though minimally, and a lot of times someone like this, you're right, doesn't paint the whole picture, and they really need a family member to intervene, because this is a case where you know, we want to do for someone what they can't do for themselves, are, you know, in their mental illness, are unwilling to do. So as you see her standard of living and all of that, as it's gone down, you know, this is mental illness. This is the illness of depression. Sometimes she's less depressed, sometimes she's more depressed, but that's overall, she's still depressed and living this way. And the hoarding is an extension of that, right? And a lot of times it's all the hopes and dreams and, you know, fears of loss. And I just wonder, you know, what all has gone on in your mother's life?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, besides your dad getting Parkinson's, it seems like the trauma maybe goes a little deeper. And so that fear of loss, she's then piling and insulating herself.
Yes.
Right. And so
that would be another hour.
Yes,
so
exactly. Exactly.
You know.
And so I think somebody,
I think what makes her afraid to unpack all that stuff is just the fear of having to confront her real emotions.
Absolutely.
I don't even know if she's ever done that before.
Probably not. She's just tried to Band-Aid it, right? And the suicidality.
That's affected me and my sister because we tend to push our feelings down.
Mm.
And we're like, oh, you're acting like Mom, you know? And it's like, I am, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
John, I recommend that you and your sister and dad strategize and consider having this kind of conversation with your mom. I want you to start with gratitude, because your mom does keep choosing life every day, and it must be unbearable and intolerable to choose this life, as you see it, deteriorating. So as little as she does, it's monumental that she is choosing life. And then I'd have you tell her that you all care so much about her that you have to intervene more, and you want to do it in cooperation with her. And so you hope that she'll choose treatment. You hope that she'll choose to include you in a meeting with her psychiatrist. But if she won't, then you will start speaking with those people. And if she won't do anything about it,
then you will consider an interventionist. But to do it in these terms of humility, of gratitude, and of care for her, how do you think she would respond if you laid it out like that?
I think she would be defensive, like she normally is. Her dad died a couple years ago, and how she responded was she didn't cry about it. Mm-hmm. She kind of, I asked her how she felt, and she's like, well, he lived a good long life, and now he's, you know, he's passed. And it was like, she doesn't even know how to touch that emotion of grief, you know, or maybe, you know, I don't know.
So, John, expect more of the same. Mm-hmm. Expect that this will not look successful, but you and the rest of the family will then have to follow through on talking and bringing together a better treatment team that's better informed. It can still include the same psychiatrist, but the person needs more information.
I think it's so hard, too, John, because it's your own grief and your own trauma that you're experiencing as you watch her deteriorate, and you feel helpless, and you then feel sad for your own children who are watching their grandmother suffer like this. There is help. There's a lot of people who are struggling with dealing with their parents for different reasons. It, you know, some is the situation you're dealing with. Some it's elderly care. It's, there's multiple things that come into play. But it's great that you're calling, and I do agree with what Jill and Alice already
Becky,
said.
And can I just add, I think, John, perhaps writing an email to the psychiatrist, you can give him information, even if he can't give you information. And so I wouldn't, you know, do her whole life, but I just hit some of the, you know, the bullet points of what's been going on that you think maybe she's not painting a full picture of. And just let the person know just how concerned you are and what you're planning to do in terms of like what Alice was talking, that you're going to talk with her about getting more help. And that, you know, any input that he's able to give you or she, you would value. But and that even, you know, you would like to come to an appointment with her if possible.
Yeah. Okay.
And you and John, we have interventionists that we work with that we will connect you with so that you have that option to have that conversation with them. And we'll be praying for the situation. I want to send you a copy of Living Strong, Finishing Well. I don't know if your mom will read it, but I think it could be inspiring for you as you navigate these challenges. But we'll be praying for the situation. It's really tough because the perspective that you have versus what she's experiencing is what you're up against. And then the dynamics with your mom and your dad, it's just, it's multi-level, very complex, but we're so glad that you called.
Well, yeah, Alice, I love what you said, the gratitude about she's choosing life every day, because it sounds like in a lot of ways she's given up, right? She's given up having anything beyond this.
Right. And, you know, the power of the mind, which we talk about every day, it can be very confusing in the deep throes of depression. Mm-hmm. You can think that you're thinking rationally, but when you are severely depressed, major depression will make you think incorrectly. And that's where people get into real dangerous situations, and we depend on our loved ones and people around us to help us, you know, with that next process. We are going to take a break, but we're going to come back. We're going to talk with Cindy after this break. You know, we're going to take calls 1-800-229-3000 for the next couple of hours. We want to help you, and I love that, you know, John has been listening for a long time, and it was his first call. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've been listening a long time, and you haven't made that call yet, but we're here for you. And, you know, you just never know what picking up the phone will do for you in a way that you may minimize it. Oh, I can figure this out, or it's not that big of a deal. Well, it's a big deal if it's bothering you, and I think... you know, just reaching out, calling us, calling somebody for help. We want to get you onto that next path of freedom, healing, and a new life. We'll be right back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. In case you hadn't heard, we have a matching gift campaign going on, and that means that your gift will be doubled. We had a group of donors who said, we want to establish a seed to start a matching gift, and it's at $400,000. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
It's really amazing. And so for every gift that you give up to that $400,000, it will be doubled. And we want to meet that match because it will make a difference in the lives of so many people. Everything that we do depends on your giving, and it makes a difference. We hear about it every day. So if you want to be participating in this match, I want you to go to newlife.com, click donate, or you can text the word match to 28950. And of course, you can always call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
And Becky,
it will be a difference maker. Go ahead, Alice.
Your donations, folks, they keep us on the air. It shocked me to learn how incredibly expensive it is for New Life to be on the air. And so any amount that you can give, especially if you listened for a long time, as I did, and it was my free therapy that I was receiving, please, any small gift can help us. Any big gift can also help us to stay on the air.
That's great. Okay, so now we're going to go back to the calls. We're going to talk with Cindy, who's calling us from Laredo, Texas, and listens on Sirius XM. Hello, Cindy. Thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Hello. I'm just calling because I last year, me and my husband have had a hard time, you know, having a baby, right? We've been married for 24 years already, and in those 15 years, we had a daughter. We were able to have a daughter. And then last year, I got pregnant, and I was so excited because, I mean, I've always had a hard time to conceive. And, it happened to be that I had a miscarriage. And so every time I think about it, I talk about it, like, it just hurts my heart. Like, I just want to heal from it, and I don't know how to do that, you know, like, I mean, every time I talk about it, I try to shut down because I don't want to get so emotional like that about it, you know, so it's just, how can I, you know, heal, you know, from this, get past from this, I mean, being a pastor's wife, and so, I mean, I always have to, you know, you know, as a pastor, you know, it can be lonely sometimes because you just can't be so, you know, transparent with people in that sense. You know, you got to be strong. You have to move forward. You have to be, you know, that person that they can go to when they have problems, and you've got to have it all together. So it's just been that type of life for me, you know. And so I heard that this topic was going to be talked about, and I said, wow, you know, like, that's something that I've been praying for, and so how can I move past this? How can I heal from this?
Cindy, you and I are sisters in this, because I was the one talking about it. I also lost my son a couple of years ago now, and so we understand, and that you can be both easily triggered to tears, and yet you got to stay strong because you're a helper and you have a role to play in your husband's church. Cindy, every time I see a birth scene in a movie, it brings tears to my eyes. I go immediately to thinking about my loss and thinking about my son, and so I understand. And the very difficult solution to this, because you might avoid the topic so as to avoid the pain and tears, but the solution is to enter into the conversation with a warm and understanding listener who can stay with you for a prolonged period of time to ask questions, to draw you out, to draw out those tears. That tears are God's biologically designed clean out system. They help us to release the grief and the stress and the anger that we have lost our child, that our child was taken from us through miscarriage. And it's in that process of purposefully lamenting with an understanding listener that over time, the grief starts to diminish. I don't think it ever goes away fully, but it can decrease as we talk about it.
Right. Cindy, I hear you saying two things. One, how do I get past this? I don't want it to leak out everywhere. Yet also, how do I heal? And so what Alice is talking about is more the side of healing. You don't just get past it. You have to enter into it and go through it. And I love what JJ always says about grief. Mm. He talks about it being like an unexpected visitor when we get hit with those waves of grief. And so what we want to do is invite grief in. Make some tea for grief and sit and allow grief to be there. It won't stay forever. Those moments come and go. And then the other thing that I'm hearing you say is, as a pastor's wife, how lonely it is. Mm-hmm. And it's so important that you have a few people that are your confidants. And it's hard when your livelihood comes from the church, and that's also where, you know, your friends and socialization is. And sometimes it might be other pastors' wives outside of your congregation, right? Someone that you can connect with, that you could take these feelings to, because for you to always have to be the strong one and never have a place is not sustainable. You need your place too. And often that's where therapy comes in, because therapy is designed to be a safe place where you can share.
And Cindy, we will be praying for that healing. I'm going to have you get connected with a counselor in your area, because that could be a very next step for you. And I'm going to send you a copy of the Life Recovery Workbook on grief. I would encourage you to get into even a grief recovery group, because you are in grief. This is what is happening. And the longer it goes, the harder it is, because we can get stuck in those things. I love that image, though. Invite grief in. Let's sit with it and let's move it on. We'll be right back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters, who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I am so excited to tell you about something. You know, Dr. John Townsend has been part of the program for many, many years, and we love John. And just last week, he was awarded, well, actually, the work that he's done at the Townsend Institute at Concordia University in Irvine, California, was named the number one best online PhD in counseling of 2024 by Forbes magazine. So when you think about, I mean, I've said this to John face to face, that the fact that he started this program, and I know people who have gone through the program and it's really impacted their lives. And I just love that he has put together a program that is, it's KCREP accredited. And for those of us in the mental health field, that is significant. And yet it's accessible by so many people, and it's solidly Christian. Mm-hmm. And so we celebrate you today, Dr. John Townsend, and all of those who have made that decision to go into the helping field, because we need more of you. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to celebrate John today. We're going to go back to the calls. Yeah, yay, John. We're going to go back to the calls, and we are going to talk with Beth, who's calling us from Littleton, New Hampshire, and she listens online. You can listen online as well. We're so glad that you called, Beth. How can we help you today?
Hello. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through this without a lot of tears, but I'll try.
Okay.
I'm looking for some resources and counseling on how to heal and navigate your way through infidelity when it has been on both sides. Just to give a quick history, my husband and I have been married 50 years this past July, only by the grace of God, and I know that. So early in our marriage, it was 3 years we were married. He was in a relationship short term. I forgave him. We moved on, had a couple kids, you know, life happened. And 28 years ago, I was in a relationship, and my husband was in a relationship at the same time, only I ended up finding out about his. And at that point, I literally fell to my knees and cried out to Jesus, and that's when I got saved. Mm-hmm. So, needless to say, my relationship that I was in with this person came to an abrupt halt because I knew that I wanted my husband, I wanted our life together, I wanted our marriage, and unfortunately, at that time, he told me that he didn't love me. I believe he said he never did. I could be wrong, but he kept saying he did not love me. So at that point, I could not tell him what was going on in my world. And I stuffed, literally stuffed that down the rest of our married life. And I knew that Jesus forgave me. I kept saying, I can't, how can I do this right now? How can I tell him this,
Beth,
right now?
Beth, it makes sense you didn't tell him then. Does he know now?
Oh, that's why I'm calling. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did he find out?
Okay, I'm gonna tell you. A week ago yesterday, we watched a movie together, and the name of the movie was Trust. And I don't, it must have got prompted him. In fact, that's what he said the next morning. He got up the next morning and very seriously came right out and just asked me, I need you to tell me. This is not going to be easy for either one of us right now, but I need you to tell me. And he asked me, and I told him the truth. I told him the truth. And so for this past week, we have been doing a lot of, and he got saved, by the way, 2 years after me. We moved away. We moved to Virginia. And he got saved. So this past week, we have been doing an awful lot of crying, scripture reading. He's had a million questions, which I said, go for it. I deserve this pain that I'm feeling. But I feel like this, I have hurt him so bad. And it's killing me that I hurt him from keeping this from him for so long.
Beth, it's just devastating that it's come out in this way, and yet I'm so proud of you that you told the truth when he asked you, how can we help you now when it just seems like such a mess and yet the truth has been revealed? How can we help you?
That's what I'm looking for any resources book-wise, and also he is more than willing. We both are. We know that in order, thank God we have Jesus, but we feel like we need to go to counseling to really try to heal from this and navigate our way through. And, you know, we believe that he says he's forgiven me. We believe our best years are to come because he said over the years he has wondered but has wanted to ask but afraid to ask. He didn't want to know, but he wanted to know. And I've had many times where I've cried out to Jesus and thanked him for forgiving me. So we've both been living with this, that now we're both free from it.
And Beth, your decision to reveal the truth, we know that it brings healing if a spouse will confess versus it being discovered without you confessing. And so you're already taking the right healing steps in this past week. Your openness to his questions, that's absolutely necessary for the healing process. Yeah. It's a very structured path that has been well developed of how to come come from the discovery or the confession into that healing process from both sides of the infidelities, because right. both of your hearts have been broken by this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Beth, and I want to hear from Jill, but Beth, here's the other thing. The sadness and the overwhelm that you're feeling right now doesn't mean you did something wrong right now. Mm-hmm. It's right. part of the grieving process. Mm-hmm. But, Jill, what would you offer to Beth?
Well, and Becky, that's what I was going to first say to you, Beth. What you're feeling now is very appropriate, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
You're feeling the weight of this secret that you have had. And I'm so sorry that you've had to live with it for so long. But some of it, you're talking about there's relief. And there's also just the weight of really having to look at it, right? But it also says that your relationship is in a place. You guys have managed, even with this secret, to grow your relationship and to have some healing there that you felt safe enough to finally confess to him. And you both right. will get through this, right? So allow the feelings to be there. You've had so many years of them being bottled up. And, you know, taking it a day at a time with each other. If you guys could survive all of this, it sounds mm-hmm. like neither one of right. you are going anywhere. And right now, as we, you know, we're going into, well, we're in Holy Week right now. What a perfect time to take all of that you experience and lay it at the foot of the cross, right? That's what we do. And we yep. allow Jesus into those yep. places, right? It's also right, a time right. where I think you can both look at why did we each choose to deal with mm-hmm. our relationship in this way, mm-hmm. right? What was the mm-hmm. hurt? Because this was acting out behavior that you both have done. It's avoidance of intimacy. Mm-hmm. It's going for an emotional hit. It's driven by things that in your marriage you guys couldn't face. And so you went outside the marriage.
I don't know if it was just we were so young. I was 17 years old, mm-hmm. and then 3 years later, he left, and I did not grow up with a father in my life. And yeah. I don't know if it was the rejection that
sure.
made me do what I did, mm-hmm. which is no. There are no good reasons.
But Beth, it is important to explore what influenced and what led to both of you doing this. And you know we have a couple of weekends that are the perfect fit for you two, which is Every Man's Battle coming up April 13th, Restore for You later on in July, and our Intimacy and Marriage Weekend. And Worthy of Her Trust will be a map for both of you. How do you rebuild from here?
Well, and Beth, mm-hmm. I was thinking of Worthy of Her Trust, but Beth, I want to send you a copy of How We Love, too, because you just said, you know, you didn't have a father and you recognized some of these deficits. And really and truly, that's what we talk about at our Intimacy and Marriage, right? Understanding why do we do. But boy, we're going to be praying for your marriage because your level of intimacy has just increased 100-fold because of the availability for both of you to be honest. We're so grateful that you called, Beth. We'll be right back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, one of the things that we do here at New Life is we promote life recovery. Recovery in every way. We believe that recovery is for everyone. And we have a program called Life Recovery Today, and it aired this morning on NRB TV. And if you missed it live, you can watch it on liferecoverytoday.net. And on today's episode, we're going to take an in-depth look at step 3 of the recovery process. And, you know, sometimes you're just curious about recovery, and that is a great way to get more insight. And I want to just encourage you to check it out there. Right now, we are going to go back to the calls. We're going to keep taking calls. If you're on hold, hold on. We've got some lines open, though. 1-800-229-3000 is the number to call. We're going to talk with Kim, who's in Dallas and listens on KWRD. And we're so glad that you called, Kim. How can we help you today?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling because I've been married for 29 years. I did have an emotional affair that ended about 3.5 years ago. My husband says he's forgiven me, but I don't know that he has. The issue is I have been not honest with him about smoking cigarettes. and he hates that. And he is basically, he filed for divorce last April of 2023, and it surprised me, but, you know, I understood it. And so I'm just trying to figure out how can I actually save my marriage in regards to, you know, I did let him know that, you know, yes, I have a problem with smoking cigarettes, but he has, like, changed the password to our email and said that he is done. Don't call him or text him. Of course, we live together still. So, yeah, I'm just at a loss.
Well, Kim, you guys are in a struggle right now. I mean, it's more than just these little parts. There's a bigger thing going on. Jill, let's start with you.
Well, so, Kim, you had an emotional affair, and that you were able to talk to him about, but you weren't able to talk to him about smoking cigarettes?
Right. He says that, you know, I've been lying to him about it. He knew it, and, you know, well, Jesus told him he'd always find out, and yeah.
Well, and here's the thing. People who smoke cigarettes, everybody knows, because you can't hide, especially if it's cigarettes. If you're vaping or something like that, it's a little different. But cigarettes, it's on your skin. It's in your clothes. It's on your hair, right? So you can't really hide that. But I think what you hiding something like that he could easily detect, having had the emotional affair, right, it's a breach of trust. Once we've had an affair, we have to go, we don't have the luxury of having little secrets. You have to go above and beyond to be transparent and honest, because that person, your spouse, has a delayed response to being able to trust you again. You know, once the affair's over and you say, I'm done with it, we're good, we're moving on, it's really not over for the other person. They're watching to see, and they have to regain, and it takes a long time. So anything that's out of step takes them back to the major offense, right? The cigarettes is a minor offense. The affair was a major offense. And for women, women typically have more emotional affairs than sexual affairs, right?
Right.
And
right.
It is a sign of, okay, what's not happening in the marriage? Where are you not being heard? What is he not listening to, right? And then someone comes along who does listen to you, and that feels really good. But that's not the answer, as you know. And so I think humbling yourself and saying, you know what? Yeah, I realize that even though smoking cigarettes, I was just embarrassed, or, you know, it wasn't that big a deal, I see how it tapped in to you not being able to trust me. And that really grieves my heart. I mean, I think you have to get in touch with how that opens up a whole can of worms for him.
Right.
I have a question. I have a question, Kim. Whatever happened with the divorce? Like, did you guys cancel it? Like, and I want to hear what Alice has to say, but I just didn't know.
I think he just filed, right?
No, it was last year.
Okay.
April. We are actually going to go through a mediation again. He told me the only way that he would keep the divorce is if I flew to Florida to a mental health facility and stayed there for 30 days and got help. That was a stipulation. It was like $16,000, and he didn't care about how much it cost. He just thought that, you know, I need to do that. But my concern is I go there, I get the help, and I come back home, and then he says, well, what did you learn? Well, we wasted all this time and money. And he always, you know, he's a narcissist. He's arrogant, and he bullies me. He's somewhat violent a little bit. He'll push me a little bit. He'll throw things at me. So that's, you know,
Kim, here's the thing. He's not a little bit violent. If somebody's throwing something at you or pushing you,
that's violent.
He's violent. And you probably need to get some help in that way. We've only got a couple minutes, and Alice, I want to hear from you. How can we help Kim get some help in this situation?
Kim, given his significant and dangerous shortcomings, I want you to get into individual counseling as soon as possible so you get clarity about whether or not you want to fight for this marriage. And whether or not you choose to go to that facility in Florida, you need to decide if you want to do your own character work. I'm also a liar in recovery. It's still my temptation, Kim, and I hate it about myself. And so people like us, me and you, we've got to decide whether or not our husband will stay with us. Maybe we did too much destruction to the marriage. Do we want to be a better and different person? Do we want to get on the right track? And you can't do it alone, Kim. And so choose, and choose today, if you're going to take action to change, because it's not your words that will change your husband's opinion, if you even want him to change. It's your actions. And I want you to get into recovery boot camp. And that might mean 90 meetings in 90 days. It certainly means getting into your own individual counseling, probably more than once a week, if you want to show your husband that you want to be different.
But I think, Kim, for you, because if he is a narcissist, then he's just making you all bad. He needs you to carry the badness in the relationship because it's too intolerable for him. And the fact that you would even lie to him would be intolerable to him. So, but do your own work for you, because with or without him, you want to be a better person, right?
Right, right. One of the challenges too, Beth, is that when you are under a threat, it's hard for you to do the work that you need to do. And a lot of times women will get into relationships where we'll minimize somebody pushing us or someone throwing something at us. None of that is okay ever. It's not. Well, and so go ahead.
Well, and I think, yes, get into your own therapy. But I think the marriage weekend, say, before I go away to a hospital, can we do this marriage weekend?
That's a good idea.
And start there, right?
I want to send her a copy of The Emotionally Destructive Relationship, because I think what you both have presented is so powerful. And just, it seems like there are these little things that somebody can call out in us, but then at the last minute, we forget that there's another person in this relationship. And, you know, Kim, we'll be praying for just healing, because he may exhibit narcissistic traits. But we want him to be whole and healthy as well. But it's going to take both of you working really hard in the same direction. We're so glad that you called today. We just have a minute or so left. And Jill, do you have any insight just in that thought process of destructive relationships?
Well, it's so difficult because we typically focus on what the other person is doing. And it's like, if only they wouldn't do that, they wouldn't be violent, right? They wouldn't accuse me. And yet we only can work on ourselves, really. And in doing that, when we focus on our part of it, it does change the relationship. It makes
sure
the biggest impact.
It sure does. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Alice. Thank you, listeners. If you are on hold, hold on. We'll get right to you in just a minute. You can call us, 1-800-229-3000. We're glad that you joined us today. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.